The following is tape 2 of reading from Prabhupada Meditations.
Meditation on Pride, 2.3. A quote from Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi 135. There is no difference between the spiritual master's instructions and the spiritual master himself. In his absence, therefore, his words of direction should be the pride of the disciple. What does this mean, that the guru's order is the pride of the disciple? It means the disciple has received a treasure, and this is the cause of his satisfaction. He's not boastful about it, but undeniably his guru's order is a cause for self-congratulation. He's confident that a great soul is leading him back to Godhead. He's no longer downtrodden. The disciple of a bona fide spiritual master has won the prize, the cream, the flower. Such pride exists even in the Supreme. Lord Krishna is proud of Srimati Radharani, and she is proud of him. Srila Prabhupada was proud of his Guru Maharaj, who was never defeated. And his Guru Maharaj was proud to be the son of Bhaktivinod Thakur. All devotees of Lord Chaitanya are proud to belong to the Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya. Material existence crushes us and makes us ashamed.
Our relationship with Srila Prabhupada makes us transcendental, yet this pride doesn't work against humility. We always remain a fool before the spiritual master. One time I wrote to Srila Prabhupada that I did not think myself a very bold preacher. He wrote back that he too once thought he could not speak, but by practice he gained confidence. Moreover, he said, "We are not cheating anyone when we speak, so you should not be hesitant or ashamed." Prabhupada compared the devotees of the Lord to a servant of the king. As the king is most honorable, so is his servant.
The spiritual pride in the guru's order implies a grave responsibility. One has to discharge Prabhupada's orders for the benefit of the whole world. The pride of the elite must be preserved at all costs. Arjuna was proud of his friendship with Krishna. But when Arjuna wanted to renounce the Kshatriya's duty, Krishna warned him not to dishonor their glorious relationship. And so it is stated that the spiritual master will always keep company with the disciple as long as the disciple follows strictly the instructions of the spiritual master. Let us be proud of the knowledge in Srila Prabhupada's books. Never take it as a minor event that we have come to accept them as scriptures. Who can comprehend these things except the devotees themselves? People will take it as vain glory, but even at the risk of being misunderstood, we have to speak and write of Prabhupada's glories. The world...
The world should see splendid architecture in his memory, his samadhis and museums, and the Bhaktivedanta Institute and the Bhaktivedanta Manor. Most important of all, we should consider ourselves blessed by his association. And so in pride we bow down at his lotus feet. By the causeless mercy of Prabhupada, even the lowest born and most fallen can now aspire to the topmost bliss, Krishna in Vrindavan. May we always remember that we are the servants of the true servants of the Supreme.
Hare Krishna. Next in Prabhupada Meditations is 2.4, about the times that I would bring Prabhupada a mango. And I start off being reluctant to tell the memory because I've told it before, and I sometimes call these canned memories because you try to remember them and all you remember is the same lines again, and sometimes you can't feel it. So I first quoted Prabhupada on the virtue of sometimes repeating things, that he would do that too. He says, "That question we have already discussed, but there is no harm discussing it again, because any substantial knowledge, if it is discussed one after another, twice, thrice, it is better." I want to remember the time when Srila Prabhupada accepted a daily mango from me. The amazing thing is that Srila Prabhupada used to remember this insignificant act, and even in his very last weeks in Vrindavan, while recalling the happy days at 26 Second Avenue, he said, "Satsvarupa would bring me a mango." So there was something about it that I wished to remember. The Swami mentioned mangoes. He told the story of his spiritual master who, when he was only 2 or 3 years old, ate a mango without offering it to the deity. When his father, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, told him that this was an offense, The young child vowed never to eat mango again. Prabhupada told us that we Americans could not fully estimate what a sacrifice that was, since in India, the mango is appreciated as the most delicious of all fruits. Prabhupada also recalled that when he was a boy, they always had plenty of mangoes. He remembered running into the house from play and grabbing a mango whenever he liked. And Swamiji one time mentioned that mangoes were not available in America.
So one day while at the welfare office and thinking of Swamiji, I remembered his mention of the mango and decided that I would get him one. I went to a produce store on the corner of 1st Street and 1st Avenue and asked the man for a mango. He had none on display, but brought me back to a refrigerated room in the rear of the store where he had a special case for connoisseurs. One mango cost $1. It was small but nice, soft but not too soft, green and golden. I took it carefully in a bag and brought it at once to Swamiji.
Swamiji smiled and received the mango graciously. He asked me where I got it. After that, I stopped every day at the grocer and got another mango. When I had been doing this for 2 weeks, I came again one day when Swamiji's room was filled with boys. The Mott Street boys were there, and they made me feel a twinge of envy. They didn't do much work or raise any money, and yet they were able to stay more with Swamiji than I was. So I gave the mango to Swamiji and sat down with the others. Even as I did so, Swamiji said, "Very good boy." He said it in the way you would speak to a very young child. The boys burst out laughing. I blushed and felt I was the butt of a joke. But then Swamiji said, "No, this is love. This is Krishna consciousness." And then I felt very pleased.
Friendly to all, according to Srila Prabhupada 2.5. A devotee of Krishna is friendly to everyone. He knows that only devotional service to Krishna can relieve a person from all the problems of life. He has personal experience of this, and therefore he wants to introduce this system, Krishna consciousness, into human society. There are many examples in history of devotees of the Lord who risked their lives for the spreading of God consciousness. Therefore, the highest benefit one can render to human society is relieving one's neighbor from all material problems. One may say that this definition of friendliness is a personal interpretation given by Srila Prabhupada, but Prabhupada would always deny that he was giving his own opinions. The previous Acharyas and Lord Krishna himself also defined friendliness in terms of being compassionate to others by distributing Krishna consciousness. But even if we consider that Prabhupada's emphasis on preaching is his personal opinion, the disciple wants to adopt that opinion as his own. Even Lord Krishna, while teaching his viewpoint to Arjuna, concludes, "That is my final opinion. Every living entity has the free will to hold a different opinion than Krishna, but we should not do so."
When I repeat Prabhupada's opinion, I give it as the final word. I also give it as if it were my own conviction. If I had not met Srila Prabhupada, I certainly would have some other attitude about friendliness or any topic. I would have been inconclusive, or I would have had a new opinion every few years. But once you accept the spiritual master, you should also accept his conclusions. In the beginning of spiritual life, one may adopt the opinion of the spiritual master in a somewhat superficial or even dogmatic way.
When our surrender is incomplete, we may be the mouthpiece for the conviction of our spiritual master, without actually being convinced of them in the depths of our own being. At worst, a pseudo-disciple may disagree with his spiritual master. Arjuna disagreed with Krishna at the beginning of their talks, when Arjuna did not want to fight after Lord Krishna spoke the whole Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna. He then asked Arjuna to make up his mind. Arjuna replied, "I am not firm and free from doubt and prepared to act according to your instructions.
I examine myself to see if I have actually accepted the personal convictions of Srila Prabhupada. I try to think deeply why I cannot do what he asked me, and whether I can rectify my unsurrendered self. By studying his words and associating with his sincere followers, I try to understand better the basis of Srila Prabhupada's convictions and personal opinions. I consider As the best example, Srila Prabhupada surrendered to his spiritual master. Prabhupada claimed that he had no special potency except for this, quote, "I believe 100% in the words of my spiritual master and always try to carry them out."
Now here's another of these poems, which I explained before, are like imaginations that if I had been writing poems at the time, what it might have been like, and I try to go back and do it. Why didn't I keep a diary in 1966, written in the mood of Satsvarupa Das Brahmachari? Swamiji, they want to know why I didn't keep a diary filled with the life of those days. I thought everything was in your words, and they were in books and tape recordings. I also made notes of them. What is it I should have saved for the future? Should I have kept notes like, "He has brown eyes. Today Hayagriva made a joke. I feel happy in Krishna consciousness. Haven't smoked pot in 2 months." Maybe I thought it was Maya. But I'm sorry now I didn't keep a journal of it all. I had no presence of mind. For me, the main thing was that you were restoring me to life. I was fully occupied holding on to your lotus feet. Maybe I thought there was no need to write it down because we would never forget everything you did and said. No, there's no excuse for it. Please bless me now, Master, to live in those days, remembering your kirtans and the time I met you on the street and bowed down on the sidewalk before you. As I rose, you touched me with your hand. You were in ecstasy on your morning walk, and I proceeded to the welfare office to break through the line of angry workers on strike.
Let me meditate upon being enthused. 2.7. Let us try to understand my spiritual master, who is always in blissful Krishna consciousness. Let me meditate on him being enthused as he enthused us. The Gayatri Mantra provides us with a meditation on the spiritual master, which may be applied to Srila Prabhupada. There are actually two mantras to the spiritual master in the Gayatri. The first is, "I am Gurave Namaha." I make my respectful obeisances unto my spiritual master. This means we should approach Srila Prabhupada not as a body, but as we would approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead, bowing down and offering obeisances. Srila Prabhupada actually is a most intimate friend, but he should not be taken as an ordinary person.
In his book on Gayatri, Mahanidhi Swami quoted this whole thing. Huh. Yeah. I just found that out very recently.
The Gayatri Mantra advises us to meditate on him being enthused. One time, when he was commenting on the word enthusiasm, utsaha, as used in Rupa Goswami's Upadishamrit, Srila Prabhupada gave himself as an example. He said, "How could I have come to America at such an old age unless I was enthusiastic?" He was enthusiastic to come to America because his guru ordered, and when for a whole year he got almost no response in America, Srila Prabhupada remained patient but still enthusiastic. That enthusiasm can be heard on tape recordings of Prabhupada lecturing on the Lower East Side, where his voice often cracks with earnestness to deliver the message of Krishna consciousness.
Prabhupada was so enthusiastic to write Srimad Bhagavatam that he would rise at 1 a.m. to do so. His composing of his purports was the perfect example of combined patience and enthusiasm. As he said, "Little drops of water wear away the stone. In this way I have written all these books." Let us meditate, the Gayatri Mantra advises, and so one can continue on his own or in the association of devotees. To think about and to discuss the enthusiastic moods and activities of His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada's translation contains a particularly interesting phrase, "Let me meditate on Him being enthused as He enthused us." A genuine disciple has become enthusiastic in devotional service, and he knows that this is due to the enthusiasm of his spiritual master.
We may meditate on how our enthusiastic spiritual master has transferred this shakti of utsaha to us. Prabhupada said that the mother of his disciple Achyutananda complained that her son used her to lounge around the house all the time and was unwilling to go on errands. But since he had come to live with Swamiji, he was always enthusiastic to cook and to run any errands asked by his spiritual master. Srila Prabhupada was also fond of a pamphlet produced by a Christian minister in Boston, which made reference to Srila Prabhupada's enthusiastic disciples. The minister said that he met a Hare Krishna devotee giving out literature in the neighborhood of the church. The priest said, "These are actually our boys, but previously they were never interested in going to church. Now they have become mad after God." Srila Prabhupada also said that it was only by the enthusiasm of his disciples that the Krishna consciousness movement was spreading around the world.
When we do not feel enthusiastic, let us meditate on the enthusiasm of Srila Prabhupada. Let it ignite within us our natural enthusiasm to serve Krishna. This is Krishna Ananda, which motivates all thoughts and activities of a pure devotee of the Lord. Whether he is grave and silent or dancing in the kirtan of Lord Chaitanya, whether he is being honored by many followers or treated as an outcast, the pure Vaishnava is always merged in enthusiasm and bliss. Let us meditate upon him being enthused just as he enthused us.
Radhastami, 1966, in the mood of Satsvarupa Das Brahmachari. Swamiji, I'm in my room thinking of you and what you are giving us. As I told my brother-in-law, it's transcendental loving service. It's raining today, and tomorrow I get initiated. It will be fun. I've got my red japa beads. You are my guru. I feel serious about this initiation into Hinduism. Now, it's later the next day, and you've given me a spiritual name. My true name is Satsvarupa Das. From now on, I'm no longer Steve Guarino. When I say I believe in God, and God is Krishna, and he is present in the japa beads, is this my imagination? Is it my belief? Is it fact? What is the proof? Anyway, as long as I can see you, my doubts will be defeated. I've never met anyone like you. You are as close to us as a friend and father, and yet you are with Krishna in a trance of devotion. You make strong arguments against all doubts. What's ahead? I don't know. Let me read your books. From now on, I'm no longer Steve Guarino. Let me write it, Satsvarupa Das, and more visions of you in your turtleneck jersey, your shining eyes, working at your Gita and Bhagavatam. Your spiritual body, your life in India, the mystery of Radha and Krishna. Now autumn is coming, and it is a brilliant hope. You say we will go out chanting in Tompkins Square Park. You say we will go everywhere, even Russia and China. I too may have to go somewhere. I want to be serious and get up very early and fight sleep and sex desire and work for you. It is a brilliant hope that Krishna is the supreme Godhead, and we can play with him in Vrindavan. If my father and mother don't like it, they can reject me, so what? As Ray Rama said, that's the oldest story in the world, that kids grow up and go their own way. Swamiji, you know all this, and you know Krishna. Please accept me. I'll write more soon if you are pleased with this.
Office Meditation 210. It was a real yagya to work for Swamiji at the welfare office, but it was successful yoga, partly because Swamiji was so physically near and I could beam in on him and know that I would see him soon enough. I was there to work for him to get the money and pay the rent. It was an open secret to all the welfare workers and clients that I was a devotee of Krishna and the Swamiji. I was a devotee of Krishna and the Swamiji. Before Prabhupada came, my secret was that I was taking marijuana, but now my secret was open and different, that I had become a devotee of Krishna with shaven head and shikha. I could not preach at the office, and so, except for the visible appearance of a Vaishnava, I did the exact same work that everyone else did.
Devotional service was new to me, and I wanted to keep it alive. I was aware that at every moment I was acting outwardly while trying to maintain an inward meditation. Swamiji had told us that Krishna is present in the heart as Vishnu or Paramatma, and so I tried to think of Vishnu and love Vishnu in the heart. I was also writing a poem about him, which I worked on at my office desk. One morning I told Swamiji it was hard to remain Krishna conscious at work. I said, "Swamiji, sometimes when the people in the office say nonsense, I chant within myself without making any sound. Is that all right?" Prabhupada replied, "Not only are they saying nonsense sometimes, but even the greatest philosopher is talking nonsense. So you can chant all the time like that within, when you can't actually chant out loud." So I would chant within myself. But sometimes I was able to be alone in a corner of the welfare building, and then I could chant audibly, at least loud enough for me to hear. A good place to do that was on the second floor, in the soundproof booths where caseworkers dictated their day's interviews in order to be typed up. You would take your
recorder up there and start speaking into the machine. "I just visited Mrs. Sally Burns at 62 Suffolk Street. She is receiving aid for dependent children. I found her alone with her two children. She requests a refrigerator." This was a good place to do it. "Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare." When I chanted softly but intensely, I felt as if I was pushing away the whole Manhattan Welfare Department and all their crazy clients and office girls and office men. "Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare." In my mind's eye, I could sense the presence of Swamiji, and I spoke and prayed to him, "Swamiji, please let me get through this job for you and make money so the temple can run and you can spread Krishna consciousness. Please protect me, Narasimha Dev, Prahlad, please protect me. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare,
Hare,
Hare
Ram,
Ram, Hare Ram, Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare."
If someone came by and eyed me suspiciously, I went back to dictating my welfare case, or I took out my poem in progress. And here's an actual poem I wrote back then. "I say I want to get out to where you are, just to be at your feet, but what do I do? Why don't I answer every question with Vishnu? Why do I flinch when they ask me why I'm flowering just by the thought of you? You, the indweller in all of us, Vishnu in me." Chanting without beads wasn't as nice, and so I would think of my red japa beads which were hanging up in my apartment and hanker to return to them. As the morning got late, my hunger would increase, and that was a sign that it would not be long before lunch hour when I would be able to get out and go to see the Swami. There was always at least one important question on my mind which I wanted to ask him, or a realization that I wished to share with him. One time I went and told the Swami, "When I'm in the office, I can feel the miseries you talked about, birth, death, disease, and old age, and I can actually feel that I'm overcoming them."
Swamiji liked that and said, "Yes, but almost no one knows this. They put these problems aside and yet everyone is being forced to die and grow old and be born again. For a devotee, these things are easily overcome. One great Vaishnav, Prabodhananda Saraswati, said that for him the whole material world is blissful. Vishwam Purna Sukhayate. And a devotee can control his senses easily, even though it is difficult for a great yogi. So the devotee overcomes the whole material world."
My practice of Karma Yoga was a daily struggle, but the Swami was always there to make it victorious. By His grace, one could keep constant attention, inner meditation, and sanctify the work by thinking and by using the money in the right way. Swamiji said, "Sasvarup and Brahmananda are paying our entire expenses by their work." That's what made it possible, to know that you were doing something worthwhile. I never had such a warm feeling in my own family as I grew up, but now I was Swamiji's son, part of a big family, and so I worked for that. Next is a poem written in the mood of Sasvarupa Das Brahmachari, "You Know What I Was." "Swamiji, you know what I was. You can see it in me still. It's obnoxious. My mind filled with obscenities, even if I don't speak them anymore. So much semen wasted and my brain scattered by LSD. That time I sat before you and imitated a yogi in lotus trance. What did I think I was doing to come into your presence like that? I argued against your statement that there was no need to read other scriptures besides the Vedas. and I complained. I'm trying to appreciate Bhagavad Gita, so why do you have to throw in mind blowers about Krishna's marrying 16,000 wives? They asked me why I didn't write a diary. Maybe because it's too much madness. I had to relearn everything, and it took some time before writing became useful for your service. There was no need to tell you, Swamiji, all the gory details. But I could have written down how it was sweet in the morning to be with you for Chaitanya Charitamrita. When you said, if you love me, then I'll love you. I should have written it down right away. I'm sorry, it's mostly all a blank. But thank you for coming. You are saving me. I don't ever want to forget or think your help was incidental, as if I were almost spiritual and you just added a few touches. Until only a few days ago, I didn't have a bead bag. I thought you were going to teach the Tibetan Book of the Dead. I'd never seen a picture of Krishna. I thought everything was one and that I was the center, and sorry for myself. Love-starved, food-starved, you saved me.
Prabhupada jumps 212. Srila Prabhupada's purports give substantial guidance and inspiration for devotional service, but particular passages will speak with greater meanings for particular individuals. The Prabhupada jump that attracts me the most may be something that does not particularly catch your attention, whereas the line that strikes you as the most forceful of all and which you may build your whole life on does not have that same meaning for me, but many jumps will have universal appeal. With this in mind, here is something which Prabhupada said in a conversation which I was very pleased to hear.
Here is something which Prabhupada said in a conversation which I was very pleased to hear. Quoting, using any language, you should submit to Krishna, and you should feel that I am worthless. My Guru Maharaj has given me this chance to serve Krishna, to offer to Krishna, my Lord, I am worthless. I have no capacity to serve you, but on the order of my Guru Maharaj, I am trying to serve you. Please do not take any offense. Accept whatever I can do. I am offensive, so kindly excuse me. In this way, be humble, meek, and offer your feeling, and Krishna will be satisfied. Not that you have to show how you can speak in the Sanskrit language. Conversation, Hyderabad, April 12, 1975. I am glad to hear Srila Prabhupada say this. It makes me aspire to serve the Lord in this mood. I also like to think of Srila Prabhupada in his intimate relationship with Lord Krishna, in the terms he describes here. Words like this are simultaneously instructions for devotional service, as well as personal revelations by the speaker, His Divine Grace. Our reading of the Bhaktivedanta purports may also shift from one purpose to another. Sometimes we're looking for practical application in our daily life, but sometimes we read just to nurture the rendezvous with the pure devotee of the Lord. The more we get to know and love Srila Prabhupada, the more naturally we will be obedient to his teachings. I didn't say what it was that I liked in this particular thing, but it's the almost the lack of confidence that he has as he makes his offering to Krishna, feeling he's so unqualified, and yet he's daring to go ahead anyway with another kind of confidence. Because I know that the real thing is a feeling that you will please accept it. It's a very, not just some official exchange, but a very real and intensive, sensitive exchange. Okay, we'll start the next one.
Call to action, 213. One can't help but be drawn into action when he reads and meditates on Prabhupada's purports. They are calls to action on many levels. Surrender to Krishna. Chant Hare Krishna. Tell everyone you meet about Krishna. If you want to keep your life unchanged, but you still want to read Srila Prabhupada's books, it will put you into conflict. He pricks the conscience. And yet he soothes the mind and spirit as he reminds us that we are not this body and we do not belong to the perishable and temporary world. Srila Prabhupada also reminds us of the easy process of chanting Hare Krishna and performing devotional service by which we can transcend birth and death.
The process is so easy that even a leaf or a little water or fruit can be offered to the Supreme Lord in genuine love, and the Lord will be pleased to accept it. No one therefore can be barred from Krishna consciousness because it is so easy and universal. who is such a fool that he doesn't want to be Krishna conscious by this simple method, and thus attain the highest perfection of life of eternity, bliss and knowledge. Bhagavad Gita 9.26 Purport. It is possible to read Srila Prabhupada without responding to his call. Is it possible to read Srila Prabhupada without responding to his call for action? What if one rationalizes his reading in such a way that he reads without changing his life? No, it is not possible. Any attraction to his books will change a person's consciousness in a favorable way. At least the reader will continue hearing the holy names of Krishna. And the fact that he likes to read means he is favorable to the pure devotee. And so Krishna will be favorable to him.
I'm appreciating this book's Prabhupada appreciation that I was really on a streak for, and continued for four volumes of just like looking at, considered Prabhupada like a big gem. I'm just looking at all these different angles of this one is that Prabhupada is making a call to action, and there's another one. So many ways to look at him and appreciate him. And I hope the readers, I was offering the readers that, I think I told you somebody, well, it was Shonika Rishi's wife was staying at the hospital in Bhaktivedanta Hospital in Bombay, and she said the doctors there were reading this and liking it. I forgot where you ended. But it's natural that as we meditate on Srila Prabhupada's preaching, we should desire to become a preacher all too. He wants this of his followers. It's also natural for each reader to try to adjust Prabhupada's command to his own situation. Srila Prabhupada also advises this when he says that one should take up Krishna consciousness and preach, quote, according to his capacity, unquote. Prabhupada's invitation to completely surrender to the will of Krishna will find us falling short somewhere or other. But we can follow the Mahajans described in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Gradually we will find ourselves swept up by the flow of their devotional service. Therefore, let us not be afraid to read Srila Prabhupada's books, even though we feel we're not capable of fully responding. It is better in any case to hear his message and to be humbled by thoughts of pure devotional service. Even if one did nothing else but read Srila Prabhupada's books, that in itself would be a reply to the call for action. And is a quote in the Bhagavatam 1.6.13 purport. In this age, devotional service of hearing and repeating the holy glories of the Lord is strongly recommended, and one who takes the vow of renunciation to family life need not imitate the Parivajakacharya like Narada or Lord Chaitanya, but may sit down at some holy place and devote his whole time and energy to hear and repeatedly chant the holy scriptures left by the great Acharyas like the six Goswamis of Vrindavan. I'm following this policy when I come to these poems. I read them myself, so this is in the mood of Satsvarupa Das Brahmachari. Although I didn't write any poems in 1966, now I'm going back and imagining that I did write them. Summer morning, 2:14. I'm up in my room at 2 a.m. thinking of Krishna and Swamiji, or I should say, thinking of Swamiji, because I can't really think yet of the Supreme Lord. But I have my red beads and I'm fighting sleep. I don't know anything, but I'll see my spiritual master in just a few hours. I'll walk to the storefront, sit inside, and he'll come looking very seriously and calm. He'll begin to sing, softly, softly, while the sunbeams filter dust motes and the first garbage cans start clanging. I'll be listening to the new knowledge of Lord Chaitanya's teachings to Sanatana Goswami. I think that's how you spell it. Swamiji doesn't talk long in the morning because Rupanuga and I have to get to work. That's blissful too, saying goodbye to Swamiji and the boys, and then I'm on my own. I take my necktie out of my back pocket and tie it on as I walk, buttoning my jacket, feeling cowherd boy bliss after two bowls of heavenly porridge with ISKCON bullet juice into that sad, glad atmosphere of the downtown street. I'm alone, but no longer alone. The cowherd boy Govinda, the Supreme Personality, who Swamiji loves and wants us to love, he seems to be calling me. I seem to be one of his frolicking friends, and my necktie is like some paraphernalia for Govinda's sports. I can't explain it, but all I know is that before I met the Swami, going to work was never like this.
The Path of Mental Worship 3.1. Prabhupada meditation may be considered as a type of mental deity worship. For worshipping the Archa Vigraha of Krishna, one may form a murti form. Various materials such as metal, wood, marble, mind is also one of the authorized forms. Similarly, one may meditate on the pure devotee, and this is an acceptable worship or service. The word meditation is often interpreted to mean an impersonal or void contemplation. But according to Vedic literature, meditation is always on the form of Lord Vishnu or one of his incarnations. In the Narasimha Purana, it is stated, meditation focusing on the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead has been accepted as transcendental and beyond the experience of material pain and pleasure.
By such meditation, even one who is grossly miscreant can be delivered from the sinful reaction of his life. This means that the meditation on the Lord, when properly performed, actually purifies one's of sinful life. As stated in a Padma Purana, a person who is always engaged in meditation on the sweet pastimes and wonderful activities of the Lord surely becomes free from all material contamination. Nectar of Devotion, page 92. Devotees who render service to the Lord within their minds are often persons who are not able to render service externally or with their bodies. In the famous case of the Brahmin in South India, he was a poor man and lacked sufficient money for opulent deity worship. Therefore, when he heard from a Vaishnava that activities could be performed even by meditation, he became very enlivened.
Prabhupada writes in the Nectar of Devotion, if a person is unable to actually perform Vaishnava activities physically, he can meditate upon the Vaishnava activities and thereby acquire all the same results. Another case of a devotee who was restricted was Krishna's father, Vasudeva. Vasudeva was imprisoned by Kamsa, but nevertheless, upon the birth of Lord Krishna, Vasudeva performed acts of mental charity and distributed millions of cows to the brahmanas. We are also restricted in an external sense from going back in time and being with Srila Prabhupada. Therefore, when we remember or meditate upon those times, it can be just as good as any external service for the spiritual master. An outstanding example of a devotee who performed mental deity worship was Nrisimhananda Brahmachari. Therefore, when we remember or meditate upon those times, it can be just as good as any external service for the spiritual master. An outstanding example of a devotee who performed mental deity worship was Nrisimhananda Brahmachari, who used to meditate upon Lord Chaitanya.
One time when Narasimhananda Brahmachari heard that Lord Chaitanya was coming to Vrindavan, he became very pleased and mentally began decorating the way there. Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Chapter 1. Narasimhananda Brahmachari contemplated a broad road starting from the city of Kulia, which he embedded with jewels and bedecked with flowers. He also decorated the sides of the road with bakula flower trees, lakes, birds, and cool breezes. By this process, he was actually able to follow the Lord's physical progress, and thus he noted within his mind that he could not complete the mental road beyond a certain point. He therefore predicted that Lord Chaitanya would physically not be going beyond that point, and he was correct. Commenting on these activities of Narasimhananda Brahmachari, Prabhupada writes as follows.
For a pure devotee, it is the same whether he materially constructs a path or constructs one within his mind. This is because the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Janardana, is bhava-grahi, or appreciative of the sentiment. For him, a path made with actual jewels and a path made of mental jewels are the same. Though subtle, mind is also matter, so any path, indeed anything, for the service of the Lord, whether in gross matter or in subtle matter, is accepted equally by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Lord accepts the attitude of his devotee and sees how much he is prepared to serve him. The devotee is at liberty to serve the Lord either in gross matter or in subtle matter. The important point is that the service be in relation with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's CC Madhya 1.161 purport. Needless to say, we are not advocating stopping physical activities in the service of Srila Prabhupada. One should serve the spiritual master with all one's senses. But one who has a tendency and who has the opportunity can make concentrated attempts to return to times when he was in the presence of Srila Prabhupada, to relive the kirtans, the hearing of lectures, and the personal inquiries made in the presence of Prabhupada's Vapu form. Just as a Paribrajakacharya sannyasi does not reside in a particular temple or home, and therefore worships the deity of Krishna in his mind wherever he is, so a devotee of Prabhupada, wherever he is, can stop and recall Srila Prabhupada by the process of mental worship. By meditation, we are no longer restricted by time or other physical inabilities, just as the poor Brahmana overcame his financial disability, just as Vasudeva overcame his imprisonment, and just as Nrisimhananda Brahmachari overcame the distance of miles which separated him from Lord Chaitanya.
In Prabhupada meditations, we are attempting to share such mental worship through writing. Thus, anyone who is inclined can come with us into Swamiji's room at 26 Second Avenue, talk informally with him, feel what it was like, and join in the kirtanas with him. One can recall the early days and hear the philosophy for the first time while typing up the tapes of Prabhupada's teachings of Lord Chaitanya and Krishna book. In this way, one may be completely absorbed in thinking of Prabhupada, both in one's present day services within Prabhupada's mission as well as by the worship of remembrance.
As recommended by Srila Prabhupada, by his mind, the Krishna conscious person always thinks of the activities of the Lord as he is speaking on the battlefield of Kurukshetra or engaged in his various pastimes in Vrindavan with his devotees. In this way, one can always think of the activities and pastimes of the Lord. This is mental culture of Krishna consciousness. That's Nectar of Devotion, Roman number 22. Next is another one of these poems that I wish I had written by Satsvarupa Das Brahmachari. This is called "I Want to Say." Swamiji, you've made my life happy, and you give hope for the future life. You've given us the most relishable, all-attractive personality of Godhead. I want to thank you by becoming your menial servant. You talk with us as if it's normal for you, but you are an intelligent, spiritual aristocrat, and we were ganja smokers, meat eaters, and other things I needn't mention. You seem glad to see us, especially when we meet in your room, and we ask you about the spiritual world, and we also talk about this world. I want to tell you, you are cleaning my heart, and my body and mind. I was so egocentric, I still am, but it was much worse. You're giving me God, and there's no way I can repay such a gift. I knew priests before, but they couldn't figure me out. My father said I was a Greek tragedy waiting to happen. You're the one in my life. I want to say it, and use my life as your servant along with your other disciples. I'd like to work for you at the welfare office. Please give me more typing of Bhagavatam, and I'd like to change the titles of your lecture on the sign in the storefront window. Please give me more to do. I'm young and can do things, although mostly I'm incapable. You could really use some competent, well-to-do disciples, people with brains for dealing with the world, and people with pure hearts and humble natures, or good philosophers and organizers, at least simple, rugged souls, ready to do whatever you ask, ready to transform themselves into preachers because you have asked for it. I'm none of these good things, but you don't hold it against me. You act as if I am something good, and you've given me the name Satsvarupa Das, truth personified, the servant of. Also, I want to say, I like the mantra describing you, very dear to Krishna on this earth. That's you, because you have taken shelter at the lotus feet of the Transcendental Lord. I love the way you translate. I want to offer you my obeisances and do your work my whole life.
3.4. One can meditate on one's relationship with Srila Prabhupada in many ways. One way to quickly evoke gratitude toward the spiritual master is to think of how he saved you. Srila Prabhupada used to think of his Guru Maharaj in this way. On several occasions, Prabhupada was overcome with emotion as he said, "He saved me and he pulled me out of material life." While narrating the early life of Narad Muni, Prabhupada informs us that all bona fide acharyas work to rescue fallen souls.
The Bhaktivedantas see that the people in general are wasting time in false sensuous things. Their business is to get the ignorant mass of people to re-establish the lost relationship with the personality of Godhead. By such endeavor, even the most forgotten soul is roused up to the sense of spiritual life, and thus being initiated by the Bhaktivedantas, the people in general gradually progress on the path of transcendental realization. That's Bhagavatam 1.5.24 purport. We may also profit by meditating on the words causeless mercy. We did not deserve the great fortune of Prabhupada's association. Neither did he come under the force of karmic cause and effect. He didn't come seeking a personal gain. There was no reason for him to come except for the loving desire of the Supreme Lord to bring all separated parts and parcels back to Godhead. Prabhupada's causeless mercy is materially inconceivable, but it is a fact that we have become touched by His grace.
Srila Prabhupada has also advised us to remember what we were before we were saved by His divine grace. We should be conscious of the difference between our present and past conditions and be always careful not to fall from the most exalted life. Bhagavatam 6.2.27 purport. When we think of our lives before and after meeting Srila Prabhupada, we are very grateful and happy, yet we should also be very sorry that we were so entangled in sinful life. Both lines of thinking should be kept alive. It is the duty of a pure devotee to regret his past sinful activities in illicit sex, intoxication, meat-eating and gambling. Not only should one give up his past bad habits, but he must always regret his past sinful acts. This is the standard of pure devotion. Bhagavatam 6.2.27 purport.
Gratitude for the causeless mercy of Srila Prabhupada impels us to act on his behalf as his disciples. And while acting in this way, one should be always conscious, both in general and in details, as to how the pure devotee came and pulled us out. The other day I came to you, Swamiji, after I'd just talked with my father on the phone. He said he didn't like Krishna or the Swami, and he said he and my mom will have nothing to do with me until I quit. I was teary-eyed when I spoke this to you, and I don't remember what you said. Should have written it down. But I remember your eyes smiled when you saw that I'm definitely your son. Please keep me that way. Although I'm old enough to live without my mom and dad, spiritually speaking, I'm only 3 months old. My upbringing was so bad that I think insulting thoughts in your presence, and I tend to disbelieve scriptures. But I'm sure it will come out all right. And you say that you are sure too, as long as I stick to it. I need you to correct me, but I can't take stern reprimands. You know this, and so you're always easy with me. I just want to say that I appreciate it, although I wish I were made of stronger stuff. When I told you I sleep only 5 hours like the 6 Goswamis, you were not impressed. You scoffed at me. You are not a Goswami. I really like that one. Please teach me the Bhagavad Gita. Tell me of Nanda and Yashoda's son. Tell me every morning of Lord Chaitanya, and please never stop. And as you get to know me and see I'm shot with vices, unclean, can't sit up straight, can't remember, don't have pure faith to carry out orders, please know that despite my faults, I really think I can make it and be a follower of yours my whole life, if you'll accept me. That's what I'm asking.
He saves me not just once. 3.7. He saved me when I was in the darkness of ignorance. He should not forget, but keep alive the memory of our conversion. Meditation on Srila Prabhupada as the one who saved us is more than gratitude for a past favor. Rather, we are in constant need of His saving grace, and He is always ready to protect us. Even after Diksha, a disciple is constantly tested by Maya. There is every chance that one may fall down again and return to former ways. Even Lord Brahma is subjected to illusion and suffering, and so he turned to the Lord. I pray that in the course of my material activities, I may not be deviated from the vibration of the Vedic hymns. Bhagavatam 3.9.24. Srila Prabhupada comments on these prayers as follows.
Brahma, as the supremest Brahma, is afraid of a fall down, and therefore he prays to the Lord for protection. This is a warning for one and all in a spiritual advancement of life. Unless one is sufficiently protected by the Lord, he may fall down from his spiritual position. Therefore, one has to pray constantly to the Lord for protection and a blessing to carry out one's duty. Bhagavatam 3.9.24 purport. In the case of Lord Brahma, the Supreme Lord was his direct spiritual master. But in everyone else's case, we should turn to both Guru and Krishna. Our need for this relationship is an ongoing one, and this is another proof that the relationship is not diminished by time or confined to one act which our Guru performed when we were neophytes and needed an initial pick-me-up.
At the time of Srila Prabhupada's disappearance from this world, his followers were forced to learn that the relationship with him continued by service and separation. Previous to Prabhupada's disappearance, we had heard the philosophy of serving and separation, but now we had to learn it as a substantial fact of life. The fact that Prabhupada's followers could continue as before and increase their feelings of devotion and even increase their serving capacity proved that he was very much still with them. Although in certain ways we may have grown up and matured, we remain disciples of Srila Prabhupada. After a few years of experience, the disciple knows what he is supposed to do, and so he follows the rules and regulations and discharges routine duties. He doesn't need to be constantly told these things. One also comes to know that the strength for performing devotional service is given by Lord Krishna in the form of transcendental knowledge. But even when he knows these facts and preaches about them to others, the active ingredient is always the Guru's mercy. A warrior may possess a good weapon, but unless he has the strength to pick it up and use it, he will be defeated. The strength for fighting Maya is a spiritual strength, Bala, which is given by the grace of Lord Balaram. The spiritual master is the representative of Lord Balarama, and so it's to him we should pray for ongoing protection. We may make a distinction here between meditation and prayer. Prayer is a type of meditation, but with the emphasis on personal importuning. In the example of Lord Brahma, previously quoted, he was meditating on the Supreme Lord and urgently requesting his help. Prabhupada states, the only prayer to make is to Krishna is, "Dear Lord, please give me the strength to serve you. Any other prayer, you'll never be happy." That's from a lecture, August 1975. Again, the only prayer to make to Krishna is, "Dear Lord, please give me the strength to serve you. Any other prayer, you'll never be happy."
As Prabhupada's mercy is the constant factor for spiritual success, so his disfavor will be the direct cause of fall down. Therefore, we should always be aware of the gross and subtle forms of Guru Aparadha. But all dangers on the path, such as continued temptation from Maya or the committing of offenses to the Guru, can be mitigated by sincere attempts to follow the teachings of Lord Krishna as given by his pure duty. We need not be depressed by the fact that we are always in need of help and that there is danger at every step. All we need is to constantly be aware of our weakness and turn to the one who can save us. As Prabhupada advises, we must simply pray, "Krishna, please pick me up," not just once.
Which Prabhupada? 3.8. The name Prabhupada doesn't refer only to his divine grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Previous Vaishnava Acharyas such as Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Rupa Goswami and many others are also known as Prabhupada. In this verse, the word Prabhupada referring to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is significant. Regarding this, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami Prabhupada comments, "Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the Supreme Personality of Godhead Himself, Sri Krishna, and all His servants address Him as Prabhupada. This means that there are many Prabhus taking shelter under His lotus feet. The pure Vaishnava is addressed as Prabhu, and this address is an etiquette observed between Vaishnavas. When many Prabhus remain under the shelter of the lotus feet of another Prabhu, the address Prabhupada is given. Sri Nityananda Prabhu and Sri Advaita Prabhu are also addressed as Prabhupada. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Sri Advaita Prabhu and Sri Nityananda Prabhu are all Vishnu Tattva, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu. Therefore, all living entities are under their lotus feet. Lord Vishnu is an eternal Lord of everyone, and the representative of Lord Vishnu is the Lord's confidential servant. Such a person acts as a spiritual master for neophyte Vaishnavas. Therefore, the spiritual master is a representative of Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Lord Vishnu himself. For this reason, the spiritual master is addressed as Om Vishnupad or Prabhupad. C.C. Madhya 10:23.